My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nate Davis has been covering the NFL for USA Today for years now, pretty much most of this century. And he has written just the other day about everybody's off season. He graded everybody's off season, and he gave Washington a pretty healthy grade. Nate joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Nate, thanks for the time, as always. Hope you're well. So before we get to Washington specifically, who had the best off seasons of the 32 teams in the NFL? You had a couple of A-pluses. I think you had one A-plus, maybe. Tell everybody who had that.
Yeah, Kevin, good to be with you. I gave the A-plus to the Bears, kind of for some obvious reasons, although I think maybe they haven't gotten enough credit for getting into position for Caleb Williams, and it's not because they were terrible last year. It's because Ryan Poles made a smart trade the year before. People have kind of talked, and I think correctly so, that probably no number one pick has landed in such a good situation. I guess you could maybe argue Andrew Luck a few years ago, but they really set things up nicely for Caleb Williams to be a successful guy, both through their drafts, through what they did in free agency to get guys like DJ Moore in the trade last year, and Keenan Allen this year, locked up Jalen Johnson. Just have had a really good, I think, couple years. And I think the NFC North is probably going to give the AFC North a run for its money as the best division in the NFL this year. But I think the Bears have really set themselves up to possibly be a wild card team this year.
I'm trying to think, like, what number one overall quarterback? I mean, the Andrew Luck example, I think, is the best one. But are there other examples where the number one overall QB stepped into a situation where they weren't going into a terrible team situation, but actually an advantageous situation?
Luck kind of, and there were questions about that Colts team, after the terrible year where Peyton had the neck surgery, but I don't think they were necessarily viewed as a turnkey operation. And, maybe that's a little unfair for these Bears, but I think they had a winning second half last year, finished 7-10, and then have added to that roster. And have had some decent continuity there with Matt Eberflus, who, the defense has gotten consistently better, but Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Joe Burrow, Jared Goff, Cam Newton, Sam Bradford, obviously, kind of a familiar name in Washington since the Rams moved off the RG3 pick back in 2011 because they had Sam Bradford, but we know where that went and where that was. But Alex Smith, Eli Manning, Carson Palmer, I mean, David Carr. I mean, it's an ugly list just you know, for over the last two decades.
Yeah, I mean, you really would have to go back to, you know, 83, and it ended up being a trade. I mean, Elway getting picked one overall by the Colts, who were terrible, and, you know, would move shortly thereafter, and him getting dealt to a team in Denver that actually had some talent. Not a ton of talent, but enough. All right, so on you mentioned the NFC North might be the best division in football, you know, more so than the AFC North. Do you still view, though, Detroit to be a sizable favorite? I mean, those are kind of the odds right now. And most, you know, most odds, you know, pick Green Bay to finish second. But do you think Chicago can make a run to 9-8, 10-7, and be a wild card team?
I do. I haven't done my record projections yet and sat down and really kind of looked at the schedule. I mean, obviously, the Detroit will have, you know, based on the last year's numbers, they'll have the hardest one. I don't think Detroit and Green Bay are that far apart. I mean, you just look at the fact that how both teams played the 49ers pretty tough in San Francisco in the playoffs and back-to-back weeks in the playoffs. And then, you know, we saw what the Packers dismantled the Cowboys in that wild card round. I think the Lions had a little bit of an easier road to the NFC Championship game. But I think they're definitely 1 and 1A, wherever you want to put them. But I think the Bears do they get the last place schedule or not? But, I mean, they'll certainly have an easier path to some degree than those other teams. And just given, again, you know, given the 7-10 finish, you know, they gave the Lions some really tough games, you know, in recent years. I think that they're going to have a chance. And given the way the NFC is set up, you know, I don't think anyone thinks the two teams are going to come out of the South. You know, we'll kind of see about the East, but I've got some questions as to whether or not the Cowboys are going to be back in the playoffs this year. I mean, we all know about the historical turnover in the playoffs year over year, and we're certainly going to see some new teams get in there. But I think the Bears have a legitimate shot to, like you said, get to that 9 or 10 wins. Particularly, you know, given all the talent they've added, and given that that's only, you know, a 2-win improvement off a team last year that didn't have what we presume is going to be possibly a generational quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, you know, Green Bay closer to Detroit. Let's not forget they went in on Thanksgiving Day and beat the Lions, and that really kind of sparked what ended up being kind of a late season run into the postseason where they destroyed Dallas. And to your point, you know, they were just as close to knocking off the 49ers. They didn't have, you know, the lead that the Lions had in the NFC Championship game, but they were right there with the 49ers in the divisional round. We're talking to Nate Davis from USA Today. All right, tell everybody where you had the Commanders, what you graded the Commanders offseason as, and why.
Yeah, I gave them an A. And I think, you know, obviously the long existing shadow is receding now over this franchise. But I thought that, you know, given all the cap space they had, I thought Adam Peters and Dan Quinn approached free agency kind of in a measured way, which, again, Washington fans aren't necessarily used to a measured approach in free agency. But, you know, you had to spend some of that money just you know, to comply with the CBA. But I didn't feel like they overspent. They got a bunch of young players in here, a lot of players Dan Quinn knows from Dallas that can kind of help him set that culture. I've done enough interviews and talked with Austin Eckler and Bobby Wagner both to know that I think those are going to be really good locker room guys for a young team and guys that, you know, even in the later stages of their career that I think are going to contribute nicely on the field. And then obviously, you know, I think every reason to be excited about Jaden Daniels for a team that's kicked the quarterback problem down the quarterback can down the road for so many years now. You finally got somebody to invest in and build around. And I just think it's, you know, I think it's encouraging to see this team actually seems to have a path forward and a plan where for so many years it seems like that just didn't exist.
Were you a fan of the Quinn hiring?
I like Dan Quinn. I mean, it seems like, you know, sometimes you see these coaches get that second opportunity and leverage it. I mean, sometimes they don't. It seems like he's kind of learned from some of the things that went wrong with his time in Atlanta, which wasn't terrible. I mean, everyone looks to that Super Bowl collapse, which, you know, how much is Dan Quinn, how much is Tom Brady, how much is Kyle Shanahan, you know, I don't know, but I mean, the Falcons have been to Super Bowl twice, and he's gotten them there once. You know, those players, I think, did believe in him for most of the tenure there before the bottom fell out in the end. But I mean, I think you certainly needed a defensive makeover here. We'll see how it goes with Dan Quinn. I think you could have done worse, but I think a veteran stabilizing presence is a good thing. And I also think, you know, some way, you have, and also touching on the free agency thing, you don't hire a coach primarily to hurt your rival, but I mean they certainly have done their fair share of damage to Dallas in this offseason, so that's going to help too.
Although I like the Mike Zimmer hire. I think they got themselves a really good defensive guy. I think he's always been much more of a great defensive coordinator than a great head coach.
That could be true, but it's just interesting to me on that front that you're going to a guy with a bit of with certainly a different philosophy and a different approach than Dan Quinn in a year where I, you know, it looks like everybody in Dallas is on the hot seat. You know, Mike Zimmer's going to need to hit the ground running with those guys and you know, with a unit that lost a good chunk of its rotational depth, if not its top guys there.
You know, you just reminded me, because we had this conversation when Quinn got hired, you know, when a lot of fans said, you're just hiring a retread coach. Well, some of the most successful coaches in the history of the game are retread coaches. Belichick, Shula, Andy Reid, Pete Carroll, Mike Shanahan, Tony Dungy. I mean, it's like the list goes on and on and on. You could probably make the case that the second chance for a coach that had, you know, a modicum of success in his first chance is actually the way to go in hiring a head coach.
I think you can argue it either way, but I mean, you said it very well. I mean, people do tend to forget sometimes that Bill Belichick was that retread, but I think it's like anybody. I mean, you know, I don't think anyone's truly prepared for that job the first time you get it. And I mean, you know, the Falcons had a great deal of success in his first 2 years. I think the Super Bowl came in his second year on the job there. And I think they were pretty good in his first year too, but I think also just given the way that this roster is being turned over so significantly, certainly with a young quarterback, and I know that, you know, Dan Quinn isn't necessarily an offensive guy, but I think kind of having an old hand at this job is better than also having your head coach learn on the fly to some degree as well. I mean, I think a bit of a steady hand is probably a good thing for Jaden Daniels, you know, and some of the other guys that they've got coming in. And certainly I thought that was a big component of the draft that I didn't touch on, but to draft 17 captains, I think that also tells you something about where the philosophy is going and where the character of this team is going. And I think that's all a really good thing.
We're talking to Nate Davis. Nate's done such a good job covering the league for a long time now, at by Nate Davis on X on Twitter. Real quickly, because I do want to ask you about some of the other teams in the NFC East. We've touched on Dallas a little bit. But what did you think of Jaden Daniels at number 2 overall?
Yeah, to me, he was kind of the obvious pick all along. And I mean, I know people kind of talk about, you know, he needs to learn to get out of bounds and not expose himself to some of these hits, which I think is all correct. And particularly, the people in D.C. have kind of seen the folly of quarterback that fights for that last yard and then ends up ruining his career. So, hopefully Jaden Daniels will be aware of that. And I think he will. Cliff Kingsbury, another guy that's got experience in this space, will hopefully drive that point home. But, this league is going to that dual threat quarterback. We've all seen what's happened up the road in Baltimore, how that's worked out. And I kind of buy into the notion that I think Jaden Daniels is a lot more advanced as a passer than Lamar Jackson was when he got in the league. And, you know, maybe he's not quite the dynamic runner that Lamar is, but you know, I also don't know that that's the trait that's going to sustain you over the course of your career. So I think there's plenty of reason to be excited about him. And again, you don't want to put too much on a guy, but it's interesting how his career took off when he got to LSU, kind of similar to what happened to Joe Burrow when he transferred there. And we'll see if that success translates over to the league. But I thought it was kind of the pick that they had to make, and I would have taken him over Drake May too.
All right, let's talk about the NFC East. I mean, I want to get to your – we'll start with your grades for the other teams. I actually was surprised that you had Washington at an A, and by the way, the highest grade of any of the teams in the division, because I thought Philly's offseason may have been the best in the entire league. Let's start with them. You gave Philly an A-. You included, by the way, you know, coaching changes clearly, and even front office changes, which you discussed in your write up about Washington. You know, talking about Adam Peters. But what did you make of Philly's offseason?
Yeah, I mean, pretty good. A-. I mean, probably you know, yep. The big thing there is you got to figure out what's your locker room going to be like, just in terms of not having Jason Kelce in there and not having Fletcher Cox in there. You know, you still have Brandon. You still have Lane Johnson, and I have made the point that the wisdom of Jason Kelce and Fletcher Cox could not avert the late season disaster that happened to them last year. But I still think something's lost there, and if nothing else, you're gonna have a switch there at center with Cam Jurgens, and we'll see how quickly he adapts and how good he is at the tush push and all the other stuff. But I thought it was interesting that they kind of got out of character and gave the money to Saquon Barkley, and I think it'll be interesting to see how that works for a team that's kind of just had a bunch, for the most part, guys at running back position, and you would think that's going to help Jalen Hurts. I hope that maybe they use Barkley a little bit more on the goal line than Hurts, given the punishment that he incurs in that goal line role. But I thought they had a great draft. Getting Quinion Mitchell and Cooper DeJean was a 1-2 punches anybody got in the draft, I think probably no team is better than the Eagles than paying guys ahead of time to get Devontae Smith and to get AJ Brown and Landon Dickerson and even Elliott, their kicker, done on the money front. Just kind of goes to show how differently they treat business than say the Cowboys do.
Yeah, I mean, don't you think just the Vic Fangio ad alone gives him a chance with the speed that they brought in for the secondary? Because I thought maybe more than anything else, they just were torched week in and week out with their lack of speed on the back end defensively. And they've fixed that with the draft and by bringing C.J. Gardner-Johnson back.
Yeah, I mean, you would think so. The defense arguably was the biggest part of the problem last year, although it wasn't great late on the offensive side either. Vic Fangio certainly has plenty of pelts on his wall. I think the question there is just, and again, you don't have Fletcher Cox there anymore as kind of a counterweight. You do have Graham and some other guys, but a bunch of young guys in the defense, particularly up front. And it didn't go great with Fangio in Miami. I mean, Vic Fangio is going to want things his way. He's got to do it with younger guys. And we'll kind of see if this works better culturally in Philly than it did in Miami. But, schematically, everything would tell you that, certainly it can't be worse than last year and that it ought to be pretty good with Fangio. So we'll see how that goes.
All right. The next team, you had the Giants at a B-. Am I nuts to think that the Giants could be outstanding on defense in 2024?
I don't know that you're nuts to think that, Kevin. I mean, I guess part of my concern would maybe, is a team based in New York there going to have a good defense, but is it going to be constantly exposed to being on the field 35 minutes a game because of what its offense can't do, which, obviously we've seen with the Jets. But having Brian Burns opposite Kayvon Thibodeau with Dexter Lawrence there up front, I mean, that should be a pretty good front there. I think they might miss Xavier McDaniel on the back end. But yeah, it could be a pretty good defense. I just kind of wonder, you know, how much help in complementary football are they going to get off the offensive side?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, just the idea of Burns on that team with Dexter Lawrence, with Thibodeau, with a guy like Okereke, who I thought was outstanding last year, Olajari, who, you know, I think was hurt at times last year. They've got some playmakers defensively up front. All right, that leads to Dallas. You did not grade them well, nor did they deserve it. You know, pretty much everybody understands that they were in kind of salary cap constraint hell. But tell everybody what you gave Dallas and why.
Yeah, I gave them the only F, and I don't think I had anybody else. You know, I almost put another team at D. I didn't. So they kind of stood out to me as having the worst offseason. You know, briefly on the draft, I thought they took, you know, the tackle from Oklahoma, who, you know, may or may not be ready to play left tackle, but they've already got Tyler Smith there, who played left tackle in college too, and had played pretty well in place of Tyron Smith before. So it just kind of seemed like, you know, for a team that's allegedly all in now, as Jerry Jones keeps saying, why wouldn't you take a player that can help you win immediately? You know, obviously we saw that the decision at running back was to go back to Zeke Elliott, and let's kind of see if they can piece something together there with a bunch of other guys that kind of seem like spare parts. But then the contract stuff is just kind of mind-blowing not to address, unless this is just going to be the, hey, you know, let's roll these guys out there for Mike McCarthy and see if it works this year. If it doesn't, you know, we're going to reset our cap, you know, finally after all the years of pushing the credit card debt, you know, down the road, and try to get right for 2025 if they're going to go with an organizational reset. But, you know, it's hard to believe that, you know, CeeDee Lamb is not going to get extended eventually. You know, are they really going to let Dak Prescott go in a year? You know, they really have a plan for number two. And then even if they do get these guys done, you know, that's going to create the cap relief belatedly that they could have used to actually sign some players. So you know, it's almost like, what's the point of doing it now? So I just don't get any of what their approach has been this year.
Yeah, what is the point of not getting this done and getting these deals done so that you could have had more room with the layout of contracts with Prescott, Lamb, maybe, you know, Parsons certainly coming up as well? Is it just that Jerry was so ticked off at the end of last year with the loss to Green Bay that he didn't want to reward anybody? Look, I thought that after that loss, there was no chance McCarthy was going to be back. Why are they operating this way?
I think Jerry feels like he's kind of done this every year and paid. And you know, I kind of thought that they might. You know, I wasn't in panic mode originally with them in free agency, because I think they're usually a team that lets that first wave of free agents go by. But they usually manage to pick up a guy like a Brandon Cooks or Stephon Gilmore or somebody that can kind of come in and help and be a significant piece. But they didn't do that this year either. So Jerry has kind of used that this whole, you know, we're all in thing contextually in many different ways, but you know, he keeps getting back to the fact that you kind of wonder if Jerry feels like he's been all in already and doesn't want to add any more and doesn't really have the flexibility to add any more given the shambles that their cap is in. But it's tough to parse his words and what he's thinking, and obviously he controls a lot of the levers there. Like you, Kevin, I really kind of thought that they were going to pivot to Bill Belichick, which, you know, Belichick and Jerry Jones are friends. You know, otherwise, I don't see how that marriage would work either, given two guys that want so much control over the football operation. But the whole thing's pretty mysterious to me.
So, your guess, in 2025, who's Dallas's starting quarterback?
Oh, man.
Well, let me just ask it. Will Dak Prescott be the starting quarterback in 2025?
I think it depends on how he does in 2024. And it seems like he's got less around him now than he did last season. But I mean, it also seems like he's going to have the opportunity to, you know, I mean, unless they do a last minute contract, which is probably going to be, you know, based on Trevor Lawrence getting $55 million. You know, I think Dak Prescott would be well within, you know, reason to ask for 57 or 58 or whatever. I don't know if the Cowboys are going to do that. He's got the no trade clause. what's the landscape going to look like in a year or two? You know, what are teams like the Jets going to look like? Will Aaron Rodgers be there? Is he going to bow out? You know, what's the market for Dak Prescott going to look like in a year? And, you know, if the Cowboys have decided that they're not going to extend him, is he willing to go back there, or is he going to want to leave? I mean, it's just such a hard question to know, given how the landscape and given how much we see star quarterbacks move in the off seasons anymore. Anyway, but it kind of feels to me like right now, like maybe he's not going to be back.
All right, two more, actually. Real quickly, on the NFC East, do you see a step back for Dallas? Do you see Washington as a possibility to push for second in the division behind Philly or not?
I do think Dallas is going to step back. You know, historically we've seen that nobody repeats in the NFC East. But, I mean, I just think that they're not going to be as good as they were last year, just based on personnel and uncertainty. I think you kind of hit it. I mean, I think the Eagles are probably going to win the division. And I think the Commanders really do have a chance to make some noise. I mean, we'll kind of see how quickly they adapt. And obviously that'll be contingent on how Jaden Daniels adapts. But we've seen quarterbacks, particularly dual threat guys, have pretty quick success as rookies. You know, we'll see how the defense is with Joe Witt running it. Obviously, Dan Quinn will have a big hand in that. But I think you're going to see weeks where they're going to have three takeaways and a couple sacks, and you're probably going to see some weeks where they give up 35 points. But I think that, this, again, another team to me, the Commanders, I think that they could really compete to get to 8 or 9 wins and maybe be on that playoff, that wild card conversation.
All right, last one for Nate Davis from USA Today. Are the 49ers going to trade Brandon Ayuk?
I don't think so. I've never thought so. I mean, to me, the main reason why is, you know, this team, you know, everything points to them being all in on 2024, like truly all in. And I think the reason there is because, I mean, this is really the last year that you're going to pay Brock Purdy, you know, the NFL equivalent of minimum wage. And then you've got everything else around him. You fell an extra point short of winning a Super Bowl last year. I mean, why would you trade one of your best players, and frankly the guy that became Brock Purdy's favorite target, and particularly why would you do it now? I mean, if you were going to trade Brandon Ayuk, I think you would have traded him to get a draft pick this year. It's much less valuable to trade him now and get a draft pick next year. That's not going to help you. And honestly, I think there's, you know, they're not going to be able to keep all these guys at these contracts in 2025, because Purdy's going to have to be paid. But I think, you know, if I were John Lynch, I would pay Brandon Ayuk whenever that happens, and probably let Deebo Samuel go after the season if I've got to, you know, make a salary cap decision, which he's going to have to do. But I think Ayuk is the better match as a pass catcher for Purdy than Deebo is.
Nate, thanks as always. Really appreciate it. Hope you're well.
You too, Kevin. Thanks a lot.
Yep, Nate Davis, everybody, from USA Today. We'll do some Denton news, talk a little bit about that Caps trade when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nate Davis has been covering the NFL for USA Today for years now, pretty much most of this century. And he has written just the other day about everybody's offseason. He graded everybody's offseason, and he gave Washington a pretty healthy grade. Nate joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Nate, thanks for the time, as always. Hope you're well. So before we get to Washington specifically, who had the best off seasons of the 32 teams in the NFL? You had a couple of A pluses. I think you had one A plus, maybe. Tell everybody who had that.
Yeah, Kevin, good to be with you. I gave the A plus to the Bears. Kind of for some obvious reasons. Although I think maybe they haven't gotten enough credit for getting into position for Caleb Williams, and it's not because they were terrible last year. It's because Ryan Poles made a smart trade the year before. But people have kind of talked, and I think correctly so, that probably no number one pick has landed in such a good situation. I guess you could maybe argue Andrew Luck a few years ago, but they really set things up nicely for Caleb Williams to be a successful guy, both through their drafts, through what they did in free agency to get guys like DJ Moore in the trade last year, and Keenan Allen this year, locked up Jalen Johnson. Just have had a really good, I think, couple years. And I think the NFC North is probably going to give the AFC North a run for its money as the best division in the NFL this year. But I think the Bears have really set themselves up to possibly be a wild card team this year.
I'm trying to think, like, what number one overall quarterback? I mean, the Andrew Luck example, I think, is the best one. But are there other examples where the number one overall QB stepped into a situation where they weren't going into a terrible team situation, but actually an advantageous situation?
Luck kind of, and there were questions about that Colts team, after the terrible year where Peyton had the neck surgery, but I don't think they were necessarily viewed as a turnkey operation. And, maybe that's a little unfair for these Bears, but I think they had a winning second half last year, finished 7-10, and then have added to that roster. And have had some decent continuity there with Matt Eberflus, who the defense has gotten consistently better, but Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Joe Burrow, Jared Goff, kind of,
yeah,
Cam Newton, Sam Bradford, obviously, kind of a familiar name in Washington since the Rams moved off the RG3 pick back in 2011 because they had Sam Bradford, but we know where that went and where that was. But Alex Smith, Eli Manning, Carson Palmer, David Carr. I mean, it's an ugly list just for over the last two decades.
Yeah, I mean, you really would have to go back to, 83, and it ended up being a trade. I mean, Elway getting picked one overall by the Colts, who were terrible, and would move shortly thereafter, and him getting dealt to a team in Denver that actually had some talent. Not a ton of talent, but enough. All right, so on you mentioned the NFC North might be the best division in football, more so than the AFC North. Do you still view, though, Detroit to be a sizable favorite? I mean, those are kind of the odds right now. And most odds, pick Green Bay to finish second. But do you think Chicago can make a run to 9-8, 10-7, and be a wild card team?
I do. I haven't done my record projections yet and sat down and really kind of looked at the schedule. I mean, obviously the Detroit will have, you know, based on the last year's numbers, they'll have the hardest one. I don't think Detroit and Green Bay are that far apart. I mean, you just look at the fact that how both teams played the 49ers pretty tough in San Francisco in the playoffs and back-to-back right. weeks in the playoffs. And then, you know, we saw what the Packers dismantled the Cowboys in that wild card round. I think the Lions had a little bit of an easier road to the NFC Championship game. But I think they're definitely 1 and 1A, wherever you want to put them. But I think the Bears they get the last place schedule or not, but I mean they'll certainly have an easier path to some degree than those other teams. And just given again, you know, given the 7-10 finish, you know, they gave the Lions some really tough games, you know, in recent years. I think that they're going to have a chance. And given the way the NFC is set up, you know, I don't think anyone thinks the two teams are going to come out of the South. You know, we'll kind of see about the East, but I've got some questions as to whether or not the Cowboys are going to be back in the playoffs this year. I mean, we all know about the historical turnover in the playoffs year over year, and we're certainly going to see some new teams get in there. But I think the Bears have a legitimate shot to, like you said, get to that 9 or 10 wins. Particularly, you know, given all the talent they've added, and given that that's only, you know, a 2-win improvement off a team last year that didn't have what we presume is going to be possibly a generational quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, you know, Green Bay closer to Detroit. Let's not forget they went in on Thanksgiving Day and beat the Lions, and that really kind of sparked what ended up being kind of a late season run into the postseason where they destroyed Dallas. And to your point, you know, they were just as close to knocking off the 49ers. They didn't have, you know, the lead that the Lions had in the NFC Championship game, but they were right there with the 49ers in the divisional round. We're talking to Nate Davis from USA Today. All right, tell everybody where you had the Commanders, what you graded the Commanders offseason as, and why.
Yeah, I gave them an A. And I think, you know, obviously the long existing shadow is receding now over this franchise. But I thought that, you know, given all the cap space they had, I thought Adam Peters and Dan Quinn approached free agency kind of in a measured way, which, again, Washington fans aren't necessarily used to a measured approach in free agency. But, you know, you had to spend some of that money just you know, to comply with the CBA. But I didn't feel like they overspent. They got a bunch of young players in here, a lot of players that Dan Quinn knows from Dallas that can kind of help him set that culture. I've done enough interviews and talked with Austin Eckler and Bobby Wagner both to know that I think those are going to be really good locker room guys for a young team and guys that, you know, even in the later stages of their career that I think are going to contribute nicely on the field. And then obviously, you know, I think every reason to be excited about Jaden Daniels for a team that's kicked the quarterback problem down the road for so many years now. You finally got somebody to invest in and build around. And I just think it's, you know, I think it's encouraging to see this team actually seems to have a path forward and a plan where for so many years it seems like that just didn't exist.
Were you a fan of the Quinn hiring?
I like Dan Quinn. I mean, it seems like, you know, sometimes you see these coaches get that second opportunity and leverage it. I mean, sometimes they don't. It seems like he's kind of learned from some of the things that went wrong with his time in Atlanta, which wasn't terrible. I mean, everyone looks to that Super Bowl collapse, which, you know, how much is Dan Quinn, how much is Tom Brady, how much is Kyle Shanahan, you know, I don't know. But, I mean, the Falcons have been to Super Bowl twice, and he's gotten them there once. You know, those players, I think, did believe in him for most of the tenure there before the bottom fell out in the end. But, I mean, I think you certainly needed a defensive – make over here. We'll see how it goes with Dan Quinn. I think you could have done worse. But I think a veteran stabilizing presence is a good thing. And I also think, you know, some way you have, and also touching on the free agency thing, you know, you don't hire a coach primarily to hurt your rival. But I mean, they certainly have done their fair share of damage to Dallas in this offseason. So that's going to help too.
Although I like the Mike Zimmer hire. I think they got themselves a really good defensive guy. I think he's always been much more of a great defensive coordinator than a great head coach.
That could be true, but it's just interesting to me on that front that you're going to a guy with a bit of certainly a different philosophy and a different approach than Dan Quinn in a year where I, you know, it looks like everybody in Dallas is on the hot seat. You know, Mike Zimmer's going to need to hit the ground running with those guys and you know, with a unit that lost a good chunk of its rotational depth. It's not its top guys there.
You know, you just reminded me, because we had this conversation when Quinn got hired, you know, when a lot of fans said, you're just hiring a retread coach. Well, some of the most successful coaches in the history of the game are retread coaches. Belichick, Shula, Andy Reid, Pete Carroll, Mike Shanahan, Tony Dungy. I mean, it's like the list goes on and on and on. You could probably make the case that the second chance for a coach that had, you know, a modicum of success in his first chance is actually the way to go in hiring a head coach.
I think you can argue it either way, but I mean, you said it very well. I mean, people do tend to forget sometimes that Bill Belichick was that retread, but I think it's like anybody. I mean, you know, I don't think anyone's truly prepared for that job the first time you get it. And I mean, you know, the Falcons had a great deal of success in his first 2 years. I think the Super Bowl came in his second year on the job there. And I think they were pretty good in his first year too, but I think also just given the way that this roster is being turned over so significantly, certainly with a young quarterback, and I know that, you know, Dan Quinn isn't necessarily an offensive guy, but I think kind of having an old hand at this job is better than also having your head coach learn on the fly to some degree as well. I mean, I think a bit of a steady hand is probably a good thing for Jaden Daniels, you know, and some of the other guys that they've got coming in. And certainly I thought that was a big component of the draft that I didn't touch on, but to draft 17 captains, I think that also tells you something about where the philosophy is going and where the character of this team is going. And I think that's all a really good thing.
We're talking to Nate Davis. Nate's done such a good job covering the league for a long time now, at by Nate Davis on X on Twitter. Real quickly, because I do want to ask you about some of the other teams in the NFC East. We've touched on Dallas a little bit. But what did you think of Jaden Daniels at number 2 overall?
Yeah, to me, he was kind of the obvious pick all along. And I mean, I know people kind of talk about, you know, he needs to learn to get out of bounds and not expose himself to some of these hits, which I think is all correct. And particularly, the people in D.C. have kind of seen the folly of a quarterback that yeah. fights for that last yard and then ends up ruining his career. So, hopefully Jaden Daniels will be aware of that. And I think he will. I hope Cliff Kingsbury, another guy that's got experience in this space, will hopefully drive that point home. But, this league is going to that dual threat quarterback. We've all seen what's happened up the road in Baltimore, how that's worked out. And I kind of buy into the notion that I think Jaden Daniels is a lot more advanced as a passer than Lamar Jackson was when he got in the league. And, you know, maybe he's not quite the dynamic runner that Lamar is, but, you know, I also don't know that's the trait that's going to sustain you over the course of your career. So I think there's plenty of reason to be excited about him. And again, you don't want to put too much on a guy, but it's interesting how his career took off when he got to LSU, kind of similar to what happened to Joe Burrow when he transferred there. And we'll see if that success translates over to the league. But I thought it was kind of the pick that they had to make, and I would have taken him over Drake May too.
All right, let's talk about the NFC East. I mean, I want to get to your – we'll start with your grades for the other teams. I actually was surprised that you had Washington at an A, and by the way, the highest grade of any of the teams in the division, because I thought Philly's offseason may have been the best in the entire league. Let's start with them. You gave Philly an A-. You included, by the way, you know, coaching changes clearly, and even front office changes, which you discussed in your write up about Washington. You know, talking about Adam Peters. But what did you make of Philly's offseason?
Yeah, I mean, pretty good. A minus. I mean, probably, you know, the big thing there is you got to, you know, figure out, you know, what's your locker room going to be like, just in terms of not having Jason Kelce in there and not having Fletcher Cox in there. You know, you still have Brandon and you still have Lane Johnson. And, you know, and I have made the point that, you know, the wisdom of Jason Kelce and Fletcher Cox, you know, could not avert the late season disaster that happened to them last year. But I still think something's lost there. And if nothing else, you know, that you're gonna have a switch there at center with Cam Jurgens, and we'll see how quickly he adapts and how good he is at the tush push and all the other stuff. But, you know, I thought it was interesting that they kind of got out of character and gave the money to Saquon Barkley, and I think it'll be interesting to see how that works for a team that's kind of just had a bunch, for the most part, guys at running back position, and you would think that that's going to help Jalen Hurts. I hope that maybe they use Barkley a little bit more on the goal line than Hurts, given the punishment that he incurs in that goal line role. But I thought they had a great draft. You know, getting Quinion Mitchell and Cooper DeJean was as good a 1-2. Punch as anybody got in the draft, and you know, I think probably no team is better than the Eagles than paying guys ahead of time to get Devontae Smith and to get AJ Brown and Landon Dickerson and even Elliott, their kicker, done on the money front. Just kind of goes to show, you know, how differently they treat business than say the Cowboys do.
Yeah, I mean, don't you think just the Vic Fangio ad alone gives him a chance with the speed that they brought in for the secondary? Because I thought maybe more than anything else, they just were torched week in and week out with their lack of speed on the back end defensively. And they've, you know, fixed that with the draft and by bringing C.J. Gardner-Johnson back.
Yeah, I mean, you would think so. You know, the defense arguably was the biggest part of the problem last year, although it wasn't great late on the offensive side either. You know, Vic Fangio certainly has plenty of pelts on his wall. I think the question there is just, and again, you know, you don't have Fletcher Cox there anymore as kind of a counterweight. You do have Graham and some other guys, but a bunch of young guys on the defense, particularly up front. And it didn't go great with Fangio in Miami. I mean, you know, Vic Fangio is going to want things, you know, his way. He's got to do it with younger guys. And you know, we'll kind of see if this works better culturally in Philly than it did in Miami. But, you know, schematically, everything would tell you that, you know, certainly it can't be worse than last year and that it ought to be pretty good with Fangio. So we'll see how that goes.
All right, the next team, you had the Giants at a B-. Am I nuts to think that the Giants could be outstanding on defense in 2024?
I don't know that you're nuts to think that, Kevin. I mean, I guess part of my concern would maybe, you know, is a team based in New York there going to have a good defense, but is it going to be constantly exposed to being on the field 35 minutes a game because of what its offense can't do, which, you know, obviously we've seen with the Jets. But, you know, I mean, having Brian Burns opposite Kayvon Thibodeau with Dexter Lawrence there up front, I mean, that should be a pretty good front there. I think they might miss Xavier McDaniel on the back end. But it could be a pretty good defense. I just kind of wonder, you know, how much help in complementary football are they going to get off the offensive side?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, just the idea of Burns on that team with Dexter Lawrence, with Thibodeau, with a guy like Okereke, who I thought was outstanding last year, Olajari, who, you know, I think was hurt at times last year. They've got some playmakers defensively up front. All right, that leads to Dallas, who did not grade them well, nor did they deserve it. You know, pretty much everybody understands that they were in kind of salary cap constraint hell. But tell everybody what you gave Dallas and why.
Yeah, I gave them the only F, and I don't think I had anybody else. You know, I almost put another team at D. I didn't. So they kind of stood out to me as having the worst offseason. You know, briefly on the draft, I thought they took, you know, the tackle from Oklahoma, who, you know, may or may not be ready to play left tackle, but they've already got Tyler Smith there, who played left tackle in college too, and it played pretty well in place of Tyron Smith before. So it just kind of seemed like, you know, for a team that's allegedly all in now, as Jerry Jones keeps saying, why would you take a player that can help you win immediately? You know, obviously we saw that the decision at running back was to go back to Zeke Elliott, and it was kind of see if they can piece something together there with a bunch of other guys that kind of seem like spare parts. But then the contract stuff is just kind of mind-blowing not to address, unless this is just going to be the, hey, you know, let's roll these guys out there for Mike McCarthy and see if it works this year. If it doesn't, you know, we're going to reset our cap, you know, finally after all the years of pushing the credit card debt, you know, down the road, and try to get right for 2025 if they're going to go with an organizational reset. But, you know, it's hard to believe that, you know, CeeDee Lamb is not going to get extended eventually. You know, are they really going to let Dak Prescott go in a year? You know, they really have a plan for number two. And then even if they do get these guys done, you know, that's going to create the cap relief belatedly that they could have used to actually sign some players. So you know, it's almost like, what's the point of doing it now? So I just don't get any of what their approach has been this year.
Yeah, what is the point of not getting this done and getting these deals done so that you could have had more room with the layout of contracts with Prescott, Lamb, maybe, you know, Parsons certainly coming up as well? Is it just that Jerry was so ticked off at the end of last year with the loss to Green Bay that he didn't want to reward anybody? Look, I thought that after that loss, there was no chance McCarthy was going to be back. Why are they operating this way?
I think Jerry feels like he's kind of done this every year and paid. And you know, I kind of thought that they might. You know, I wasn't in panic mode originally with them in free agency, because I think they're usually a team that lets that first wave of free agents go by. But they usually manage to pick up a guy like a Brandon Cooks or Stephon Gilmore or somebody that can kind of come in and help and be a significant piece. But they didn't do that this year either. So Jerry had kind of used that this whole, you know, we're all in thing contextually in many different ways, but you know, he keeps getting back to the fact that you kind of wonder if Jerry feels like he's been all in already and doesn't want to add any more, and doesn't really have the flexibility to add any more, given the shambles that their cap is in. But it's tough to parse his words and what he's thinking, and obviously he controls a lot of the levers there. Like you, Kevin, I really kind of thought that they were going to pivot to Bill Belichick, which, you know, Belichick and Jerry Jones are friends. You know, otherwise, I don't see how that marriage would work either, given two guys that want so much control over the football operation. But the whole thing's pretty mysterious to me.
So, your guess, in 2025, who's Dallas's starting quarterback?
Oh, man.
Well, let me just ask it. Will Dak Prescott be the starting quarterback in 2025?
I think it depends on how he does in 2024. And it seems like he's got less around him now than he did last season. But I mean, it also seems like he's going to have the opportunity to, you know, I mean, unless they do a last minute contract, which is probably going to be, you know, based on Trevor Lawrence getting $55 million. You know, I think Dak Prescott would be well within, you know, reason to ask for 57 or 58 or whatever. I don't know if the Cowboys are going to do that. He's got the no trade clause. What's the landscape going to look like in a year too? You know, what are teams like the Jets going to look like? Will Aaron Rodgers be there? Is he going to bow out? You know, what's the market for Dak Prescott going to look like in a year? And you know, if the Cowboys have decided that they're not going to extend him, is he willing to go back there, or is he going to want to leave? I mean, it's just such a hard question to know given how the landscape and given how much we see star quarterbacks move in the off seasons anymore. Anyway, but it kind of feels to me like right now, like maybe he's not going to be back.
All right, two more actually, real quickly on the NFC East. Do you see a step back for Dallas? Do you see Washington as a possibility to push for second in the division? Behind Philly or not?
I do think Dallas is going to step back. You know, historically we've seen that nobody repeats in the NFC East. But I mean, I just think that they're not going to be as good as they were last year, just based on personnel and uncertainty. I think you kind of hit it. I mean, I think the Eagles are probably going to win the division. And I think the Commanders really do have a chance to make some noise. I mean, we'll kind of see how quickly they adapt. And obviously that'll be contingent on how Jaden Daniels adapts. But we've seen quarterbacks, particularly dual threat guys, have pretty quick success as rookies. You know, we'll see how the defense is with Joe Witt running it. I mean, obviously, Dan Quinn will have a big hand in that. But I think you're going to see weeks where they're going to have three takeaways and a couple sacks, and you're probably going to see some weeks where they give up 35 points. But I think that this, again, another team to me, Commanders, I think that they could really compete to get to 8 or 9 wins and maybe be on that playoff, that wild card conversation.
All right, last one for Nate Davis from USA Today. Are the 49ers going to trade Brandon Ayuk?
I don't think so. I've never thought so. I mean, to me, the main reason why is, you know, this team, you know, everything points to them being all in on 2024, like truly all in. I think the reason there is because, I mean, this is really the last year that you're going to pay Brock Purdy, you know, the NFL equivalent of minimum wage. And then you've got everything else around him. You fell an extra point short of winning the Super Bowl last year. I mean, why would you trade one of your best players? And frankly, the guy that became Brock Purdy's favorite target. And particularly, why would you do it now? I mean, if you were going to trade Brandon Ayuk, I think you would have traded him to get a draft pick this year. It's much less valuable to trade him now and get a draft pick next year. That's not going to help you. Honestly, I think there's, they're not going to be able to keep all these guys at these contracts in 2025 because Purdy's going to have to be paid. I think, you know, if I were John Lynch, I would pay Brandon Ayuk whenever that happens, and probably let Deebo Samuel go after the season if I've got to, you know, make a salary cap decision, which he's going to have to do. But I think Ayuk is a better match as a pass catcher for Purdy than Deebo is.
Nate, thanks as always. Really appreciate it. Hope you're well.
You too, Kevin. Thanks a lot.
Yep, Nate Davis, everybody, from USA Today. We'll do some Denton news, talk a little bit about that Caps trade when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.